baby wamezoea. Nina fly so high, nina feeling need to touch the sky.
Hello everyone. Everyone.
I'm the everyone. Exactly. Just want to say it's one person.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Wamalai podcast. We are joined today by a visual artist, and her name is Scarlett Nduta, and she's actually an amazing creative, and she's done, you know, quite a bit of work around, you know, around, you know, painting. Or she said, she insisted that she's actually not a painter. She's a visual artist because she does not want to be boxed.
That's true.
After that introduction, tell me about yourself. Tell me about, you know, your background.
I don't know what to describe my background as, but essentially how I came about calling myself a visual artist started in 2016.
Yeah.
So I had this good job, and 8 to 5 wasn't going well for me. So I quit without a plan. And for about 2 months, I didn't tell anyone that I'd quit my job. At this point, I was living on my own. And so I had so much time with nothing to do, so I just decided to go to Textbook Center, buy a few paint and a canvas. I had never painted before. It's just, I was like, I have so much time and I didn't know what to do with my life. So I was like, maybe painting to pass the time.
Yeah.
And by the time I got to now telling my mom that I quit my job and I need to move back home, I continued, you know, basically just learning on YouTube. And it was something I was like, not so bad. It wasn't, I had not seen it as something that I will take up for a long time. For me at the time, it was just to fill in the gap that I was not working, I was not in school, I was not doing anything. And you know, when you come to the space of life where I actually don't know what to do with my life and I can't make a decision. So it was a way of just passing time at the time. That's repetitive, but okay.
No worries. So basically you are an accidental painter, or rather a visual artist.
Yes, very accidental. So what happened is my mom was like, if you want to go back to school, now it's the time, because I have a younger sister. So at the time she was in high school, she had just begun form one. So my mom was like, I can't pay for two people uni. So if you want to go back to school, now is the time, because now I can manage by the time she is done.
I mean, it's expensive.
School is expensive. Yeah. So I joined USIU to do a degree in journalism, majoring in PR and advertising. So one of the electives that I took is called Visual Art of the World, or Art of the World. It's an elective. And I think that class is what opened me up to love art more, because it had a lot of history with art from different regions in the world, different people, and why they do the thing they do. So that class really opened my eyes. So something that was accidental, now I started becoming more intentional with it. So I started, you know, kind of practicing what I was seeing in class. And from there, I now started being intentional, even with the YouTube videos I was looking for. So I started with landscapes because I felt like they were easy, because it's easy to paint the sky. Well, for me. And I enjoyed it, but I also felt like I don't know how to put it, like I wasn't experiencing the art form in its full capacity. So as I was still learning is when I learned about abstract art, which I also learned in class. And I loved it because it's, to me, abstract art, which is mostly what I focus on when I paint, is freedom. I can create something from nothing. Nothing can be something. And I really, really loved that. And so it's from that point I started creating abstract art, which I still didn't share with anyone. I was creating in the house and hiding until my mom was like, these things you're creating, you know, you can sell it. And I was like, yeah, maybe, but who will buy? And so she was like, I'm going to buy, create something for me, which I created something for her, and she bought. Yeah. And I think from that point, seeing that someone else, even though she's biased because she's my mom, but the fact that she saw value in what I was doing made me want to do more. I was still not comfortable to sharing my work in that sense because I was self-taught, and so I felt like I was a fraud. Like, how can I say I'm an artist yet I've never gone to school? I've only done one unit in an art thing, yet I'm calling myself an artist. But it's the constant creating that then built my confidence, and I was able now, you know, to share at least with my family, with my friends, and then with the friends of the friends. And now I'm doing a podcast with you, and many people will probably listen or not. But the thing is that I'm now comfortable with talking about the things that I do from a space where I don't feel like I'm a fraud, but more from a space where I think I can comfortably say that I'm a visual artist who, at the moment, I'm focusing on painting, but I want to also explore other mediums, which I haven't, because from 2016 till now, I have been in school full time. So I didn't have the time to explore other mediums, but I graduate soon, so I hope I'll have all the time.
How do you strike a balance between school and now this creative side?
There's no balance, first of all. I don't think there's ever balance when you're juggling things. I just think we just find a way for you know, it's like you're swimming back and forth easily, like you try and find a rhythm. So for me, one thing that worked, because I'm in USIU, and the thing with USIU, you can choose when your classes will be. So I would choose that first because I can't change like my classes. And then I can see what other time I'm left with. And then now from there, I'm able to plan a routine that works. Because sometimes I'm not creating, for example, to sell or to show people. I'm creating more to perfect my skills or, you know, to learn something totally new altogether. So it's just about finding rhythm. I don't think there's a balance. Everything is just so tiresome.
I mean, you know, other than being able to, like, sell your first painting, what else gave you the courage to start sharing and talking about your craft?
This is hard because I still feel like I don't have enough courage, especially because I've realized in Kenya, or rather also mostly in Nairobi, that abstract art is foreign, in the sense of when I tell people, oh, I paint sometimes, they're always like, can you paint me? Can you draw me? Or maybe an elephant for my house. And I'm like, yeah, I don't do that, but I kind of do this other thing. And half the time, I can't even explain what I'm doing for it to make sense for another person. But I feel the sense that some people who look at my art and they're able to tell me they feel a certain kind of emotion, or it reminds them of a thing. And then that makes me, you know, believe in the thing that I'm doing, that it's not so vague or not so abstract such that no one can relate to it. People still can relate to it. So I feel like the few people who have been able to relate to it have given me the confidence that, well, not everyone will get what I'm doing, but these few people that get it are giving me the confidence to do what I'm doing.
So sometimes, so let's say I have this song, or I have this website where I post my visual art, and people interact with it, they probably don't know who I am, etc., etc., so I'm not there to, you know, physically explain to them that this is what I do. Why do you feel that people you need to explain? Why not just show them the work? If they like it, if they don't, then.
That's a hard question. I honestly don't know how to answer it. But I think it's a podcast and there's no right or wrong answer. But
indeed.
I feel like I love explaining to people what I do, because as a self-taught person who was mostly going back to YouTube, going back to Instagram or Twitter to look for people who are doing abstract art, it was hard for me to find people who were doing it in close to me, like in Nairobi. And also those who were doing it, they were doing other, yes, it's abstract, but it was, I still couldn't relate to their work or them to mine. So it's like feeling alone, yet not so alone. So I find like explaining what I do makes me not feel alone, and it makes me have conversation with people who, first of all, did not know about abstract art. So it creates an interest that was not there before, and hopefully it makes someone else want to try, if not abstract art, but art in general. I have had people on Twitter and Instagram telling me, oh, I never knew about abstract art, but from your work, from your work, I've been able to try. Some tell me they didn't like it, but it made them move to a direction that they liked. Some are like, I really liked it, and I'm like, here are some things I've drawn. What do you think? And I feel like those conversations are really important, that I'm, in my own way, I've been able to make someone else who I would never have met or interacted with, why it not for my art. So I feel like talking about it is very important, because it could change someone's life in a big way or in a small way, and I think that's important.
And I think basically what you're talking about is, you know, it is education.
Yeah.
Is basically, you know, in informing people that this particular art exists. But also, if you think about it, you could, you know, this could be the start of you training, you know, other artists, you know, to be able to create this type of art or any other type of art. Do you feel that that's in your future?
Remember when I said I feel like a fraud because I'm self-taught? I don't think I'm there yet. I don't want to say that it's a thing I will never do in my future, but I don't feel like I'm there yet to say that I'm fully confident in teaching someone else what I do. But I can say at the moment I'm confident in directing someone in a particular, especially if they love abstract artists. I feel like I would, you know, guide them through, not necessarily teach them A to Z, but show them like, it's not that bad. Like, you know, experiment, see what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And then from there, you know, you decide for yourself. Because the other thing is, personally, because I'm self-taught, meaning I consumed a lot of people's art. Mm-hmm. And that also was good and also bad. Bad in the sense that I felt that my work, since it wasn't how other people's art were looking, then it meant I was lacking. But now I've come to appreciate that I wasn't lacking in a sense. It was just more that I was learning for myself and was seeing things that were working for me, some things that were not working for me. And it's not necessarily what I'm looking for in inspiration. And so just to step back and appreciate what I as an artist can do is very important, in the sense of it grounds me and makes me not want to tell myself like I can quit. It just humbles me in the sense that, yeah, it doesn't look like that other person's, but it's okay. This is what your art looks like and you should believe in it.
I mean, it sounds like you're growing, you know, I mean, into your art, and you know, it has been, you know, a long process. And one of the things that has happened actually last year, actually during the pandemic, is that you had your first collection. Tell me about that.
Okay, first of all, it wasn't my first collection.
Oh, sorry.
No, but I can see why you'd say it's my first collection, because it's the first collection that I shared publicly and with so much ease. So I think around 2017, I created a collection. It was very black and white, just black and white. There was no color. There was nothing. I loved it and I also hated it, because I created that collection from a point of emotion. I was not doing so well emotionally, physically. Like, it was just a very dark time in my life. And so it showed in my art. I didn't share it. I think I only posted it on Behance and still never gave out that link to anyone. I'm sure it's still there. If someone looked up my name and Behance, they will see it. But that collection taught me that, one, I can do an art collection. And two, doing art from a place of emotion is good and also bad, because you get drained emotionally more than you would ever imagine. And so it was one of those things that it was more of a learning process than a, you know, this is how things should be. So I never shared that. So my second collection, which now I did last year in the middle of a pandemic, was funded by an organization called Africalia.
Okay.
So I saw they were looking for 50 artists in Africa to share. So there were three categories, but all of those were revolving around the pandemic. And so I picked one that was talking about here and now, like the place where we are in. We're in a pandemic, everything is so bleak, nothing is nice. We are all depressed in one way or another. And the here and now for me resonated with me, because I feel like we rarely as human beings appreciate the present, because we are always working to secure a stable future. We are working so that tomorrow we have food, we have a house over our heads. We don't even sit back and appreciate, I had food today, I slept in a bed today, and that's, you know, great in its own way. So the here and now was inspired by literally the sunrise from my house at the time, because where I was living, I could really, really see the colors of the sky change during sunrise. And so for me to translate the emotion or the colors and how they made me feel onto a canvas was really amazing. I didn't think I would be able to do that, because when I applied for the thing, I was sure, first of all, they are looking for 50 artists all over Africa. So, I mean, what are the chances that one girl from Kenya would, you know, get such a grant? So, but I applied for it anyway. I mean, the worst that could happen is that I don't get the grant. So, but I got it, luckily, which, until I think I was done with doing this collection. Until I was done with doing this collection is when I actually acknowledged to myself that I, a self-taught artist, applied for a grant and I got a grant and I was able to create something that is very special to me, because I had never applied for a grant before, and to create something where someone has funded it. Art is very expensive. I don't think we talk about that much. Like, from the cost of the materials to the time that you need to create a collection that is worth to show to anyone is very expensive. So to have someone else take care of the expense and I'm only worried about the creation part of it was really amazing to me.
Yeah. I think that in your, I mean, in your journey, I mean, there's that, you know, accidental, you know, thing, what I'm calling accidental, quote unquote, but then you, you've been very intentional since then in you know, in learning, but also, sharing, you know, sharing your work and, you know, getting that feedback and even telling it. So the... How has that journey been like, especially that you know, those last phases where now you're feeling really comfortable in, you know, in being able to not only talk about your work, but share it in a way that, you know, you can actually turn that into a sale?
I think I'm not comfortable talking about art yet, in the sense of I still feel like a fraud, and I don't know why I still always feel like a fraud, but at the same time...
But funny story, sorry to cut you short, but funny story, you're actually doing really well, so that's... So it's interesting hearing you say that, but then on the other side, I mean, from the outside looking in, you're actually not only trying, but, you know, doing it well.
Why I say, like I've said, I think, so many times that I feel like a fraud, but I think what gives me the confidence to talk about my art is the fact that if I don't talk about my art, no one else is going to talk about my art. And because no one else will, I don't think. I have no choice but to actually, you know, talk about it. And in a sense, it also makes me reflect back on from where I've come. Like, I've come from not sharing what it is I'm doing to a place where I'm sharing. I've not translated most of my artwork into sale because I hate selling. And I don't think it's my strongest. I don't think like that's one of my strongest things.
Yeah.
So much so that I've partnered with a friend of mine. She's called Nungari Waithaka. She's really good with this selling things.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So we want to see how that pans out, in the sense that let me worry about the creating part of it, and then you can worry about the, you know, selling
part
of it. And I think it's freeing me in the sense that I can focus, in the sense of my work is to create the best possible art. And once I'm done with it, then it's another person's problem. Because I feel like as artists, we feel sometimes we want to control everything because that's how we thrive, like by controlling every other aspect of what we do.
Yeah.
But I feel like at the same time, it's not good. You have to acknowledge where you're not good at. I'm not good with selling things.
Yeah.
I actually don't even want to do it.
Yeah.
But the creative part of it, and the talking about the creative process and how something came from nothing to something, I'm really good at that, and I want to focus solely on that. So let someone else worry about
the selling part.
The selling part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. If you think about it, would you advise up-and-coming artists to, you know, teach themselves or, you know, go through school? Like, what based on your experience, like, what do you feel is the best path?
That's a complicated question, because I feel there are benefits to both being self-taught and actually going to school to learn about it. I think for me, any upcoming artist should take what's best for them at the time and what's convenient for them at the time. So, for example, for me, I could not go through a formal art school because, one, I was taking another degree, so I did not have the time to enroll for, you know, school. And also, now that I'm finishing this degree, I don't have the capacity to go. I feel like mentally I can't handle any school for like the next 3 years. So it's convenient and better for me to be self-taught, because then I can control when and how and the hours. But if you have the time, you have the resources for, you know, going to art school, I also think it's not a bad idea to do that and also combine it with things on the internet. Like, they're so helpful. I don't think we appreciate how much the internet has made things so accessible. Like, I feel like probably 30 years ago, someone would not think of being a self-taught artist in the sense that we think of today. At the time, they would actually really have to go, you know, experiment, fail until it works. Right now, I already know what doesn't work because someone else has already tried it and they're telling me, don't do this because it won't work because of A, B, C, D. So I'm starting, instead of starting from zero, I'm starting from like a 30% going towards 100. So I feel like the look at where you are at in life, how even your finances, even your time, and then decide what's best for you as an individual. But the greatest lesson I think I can tell anyone is just do it. Just whatever it is, just do it. Even if you think it's absurd, even if you think no one is gonna like it, as long as to you is something, if you're thinking about it, you know, every other day, just do it. Just, you know, you'll grow from there. Because I feel like creatives, we live in our heads. There are so many things that we create in our heads. And I feel like once we translate that from our head to something concrete, either on paper, on canvas, if you're a digital artist, on whatever app that is there, once you can touch it, see it, and feel it, I feel like that's where the growth point is, because now you can dissect it, you can now see what worked, you can now see what doesn't work. Because if it stays in your head, it doesn't grow. It has to come out for you to grow it.
There's also value, I've noticed. There's also value in creating a lot of art, because the more you create, the more you learn. And it just seems like that's you know, the path that you've chosen. as a last question, what do you see as your future? Are we expecting, like, you know, 1,000 collections? after Corona, can we go somewhere to a gallery and interact with your work? I mean, what do you see as your future?
Currently, I'm on a break, like a 3-4 months break, because it's my last semester in uni, and I want to, you know, give all my time to that. And so I can't say like I'm working on anything right now. I am not.
Okay.
But I'm also taking the time to reflect back on the things that I've done and things that I feel like I want to grow, and things I feel like I want to leave behind. And also, like I said, I've only been able to explore paint as a medium, and I want to explore other mediums. So I feel like my future is more exploring beyond what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And hopefully someone will give me money to actually create a lot of collections. I feel like we don't talk about the money aspect when it comes to creating. I love creating on paper, canvas, and wood boards. All these materials seem like they're not expensive, but they are, in the sense that I have to treat these materials to become archival, so that this piece that I'm creating can last for so many years without it degenerating or becoming, you know, bad. And that is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's money I don't have.
Yeah.
So one of the limitations I do have is I don't have the money to create things as I want. So I can only move at a pace that I can afford that. For example, I can say this year I can only manage one good collection if I'm self-funding, because I have to pay my bills and then now do this thing that I love, that I don't know if it will, you know, reap, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so that's a thing I have to worry about, like, can I afford to do this? And then the other thing is about showing in galleries. Personally, I don't think my work is there yet that I want to show it in a gallery.
Yeah.
I want to, because I have a home studio.
Yeah.
I want to first of all be able to show in the space that I'm comfortable with before going to other spaces where you see I have to work with other people. Like I say, in artists, we love controlling our environment and how our art looks. So I feel like I'm in the space where I still want to control most of the things at the moment before I'm able to say, now I'm comfortable for it to show in galleries. But I love the internet. So it's some sort of gallery on my Instagram. You can see the pieces I'm working on, the pieces that are available for sale, some which are also not available for sale. I feel for now, the internet is a good place to see my work.
Yeah, this is actually something I forgot to ask. Collaborations. Is it something that you're thinking about?
I've never thought about it because being self-taught, again, which makes me feel like a fraud. You're just there like, oh my God, that person has done A, B, C, D. Like, will they see value in the kind of work that I'm doing? But now I'm more open to want to work with collaboration because, again, if I'm collaborating with someone, not only are we sharing the stress halfway, whether it's time-wise, whether it's money-wise. So I'm open to collaboration. It's just that I'm not sure how that would pan out. Like, I can't tell you, oh, I want to collaborate with this person, okay, or I want to work with this person on a collection, or just let's throw ideas, we see what works for us. But I'm open to it. Like, if someone DM'd me, I'm like, oh, so I think I like your work, could we do something? It's something I would definitely jump on. Yeah.
Which can visual artist do you look up to?
There are several in the sense of, like, I view art from different genres. Like, I draw inspiration, for example, from music. I draw from acting. I draw from just anything that looks at, even like people who do furniture things. I draw inspiration from such people. And so artists like, and people who dive deep into research before their work. So, like, yeah. One Boy Kalimo, I love her work in the sense of she does a whole lot of research before actually showcasing. I don't get, my work does not necessarily need that kind of research, but from her work, I'm able to learn the discipline of knowing exactly what you're putting out, so that I'm able to talk about my art, for example. I'm able to look at musicians who do this every day, whether anyone is listening, whether no one is listening. And from that, I'm able to see that I can only rely on myself in the sense of I have to wake up every day and do this thing until it works or until it's where I want it to be. So every day is a growth point. Like, I feel hakuna stagnation. Like, you can't be stagnant or just say, I'm good. Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you so much, Nduta, for the illuminating conversation. And I've seen your work from the very beginning, and I can see the growth. It's actually interesting, hearing you talk about the doubt, the self-doubt, but then it's not something that is actually reflected in your work. Your work is actually really good. And, here's to, a very long, career and, definitely more, more collections and, more interactions with your work.
I'm excited for the future. Like, I feel like I don't have anything limiting me. So I'm excited in that sense that I can literally do what I want to do. It's just that I need to find how to do it. And mostly money.
I mean,
if someone listened to this podcast and they're like, oh, what should I do with all this money that I have? Yeah. Please invest in me, invest in my art. Yeah.
Good stuff. And, and I hope that happens, and I hope you're able to, like, access the resources you need so that you can, further your art, because I feel like your art is really, really important. Thank you so much for listening to the Wamdai podcast. We're back next week with another interesting podcast. Thank you so much to Dana Seda and Sema Box for making this possible.
See you next week.